Welcome to the Wolverine Digest Podcast, the best spot for objective and authentic coverage of Michigan athletics. If you want open dialogue, honest opinions, and in-depth coverage of the maize and blue, this is the podcast for you. And now, here's your host, Brandon Brown, joined as always by Chris Breiler.
I just want to start by saying go blue.
Well, Chris, I think people are beginning to wonder if we know how to tell time, if we know how to do our jobs in the off season or not. We just can't get it together, dude. No. On this one day a week shit we got going on.
We're not very good.
We're not the well-oiled machine we were during the season. It's a funky Wednesday today. The weather outside was shit. It's warm. Did you get dumped down with rain up that way?
Yeah, earlier. It's soggy. It's pretty moist outside. Went for an evening walk with the family, and it's pretty wet out there and overcast. But it is warmed up a little bit, and I'm already getting fucking echoes in the headset. So,
well, all right.
We're off to an early start on that. I'm back to the roots here. I'm back to the roots with the gaming headset. I got rid of, like... fancy mic, fancy headphones, like all of that's gone. It's back to basics over here. I forgot my camera light or my podcast light. I left it in the RV. So I got this bright LED light just shining in my face. You can see it glistening off the picture here in the back.
It's all bad.
I'm in shambles.
It's all bad right now. Seven people watching us. No one cares.
Would you care though? Would you care about this product? I wouldn't.
A little bit more than that watching, but not a lot. Johnson. We'll be down to seven before long here. Jared Johnson, a regular, CJ Frazier, where everybody knows your name. They just come rolling in, dude. We're always going to have a few.
At least the group that we have is loyal. Solid. They come back, they return, and you know, it's much like the tailgate during the spring game. It might only be a handful of us, but goddamn it, solid.
It's a solid core. You'd go to battle with them, and we appreciate that. Because it's been a little bit of a rough go. I was like, me and Chris are going back and forth. He's trying to figure out the audio. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I'm like, just 9 minutes late. Chris just starts laughing. We also were laughing at ourselves, dude, a little bit. I wasn't going to go there, but as I started talking to you, you were like, dude, just stop. This is the show. And I was like, all right, dude, let's just go. So it was Chantel who took the photo, right? Because and I were sitting on the RV.
Well, we were parked outside of the big house. It was for the tailgate this weekend. It was rainy. It was cold. The weather was shit. You and I obviously tried to do a pre-game show from the RV, which worked. But my wife was also in the RV, snapped a photo of us, you know, prepping, getting ready. And I sent it over to you, and I guess it just threw you into a bit of a tailspin, from what you tell me.
I want to like buy a Maserati, or I'm having a midlife crisis after seeing that photo. Like I'm suited and booted. I like the sweatshirt I got going. I got the Black Forces on that day. Hair was looking pretty good. Had a cut recently, and then, dude, a turkey neck that suits like a 70-year-old. Okay. This is a bit of a genetic thing in my family. I'm not going to point out which relatives suffer from it, but there's a number of them. And it's coming for me, dude, hard. And this is something like, I'm talking even going back to when I was like a buck 60. Like there's nothing about me other than being a beanpole. I've never had the real money, like chin profile line. It's never been part of my life.
Isn't there like a meme of a guy who's got like just an aggressive, I don't know. I see the picture a lot. It's the same dude. It's black and white. He's got the aggressive jawline and chin.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked about it before. I strategically placed this guy right here, just on the cusp of my chin. Cause I mean, it doesn't take much, dude. And it starts to show up, and I just, as soon as you sent it to me, I'm like, destroy that photo on every platform it's ever existed on, please.
So, Well, so I asked Brandon, we were talking about it before the show, and obviously he was struggling with it, having a hard time with it. And I was like, well, let me ask you. He's like, it's awful. It's horrible. And I asked him, would you rather have that or be bald? And at that point, Brandon like froze, could not answer. And I said, let's go live, because I want to know from you, Brandon, if you had to trade neck for baldness, would you make that trade? If that's on the trade block, are you making that trade?
I'm keeping the hair all day, every day.
There you go. So you can't live in my world. So how bad you think it is,
I've got a strong hairline. It's not thin anywhere. There's no grays in it. Like, I'll take that all day long. But you can be about that hat life pretty good. I can't wear scarves and turtlenecks up to my chin every day. Dude, it would have to come up to here.
It'd be an aggressive turtleneck.
So I will say, I don't think this is as bad as this, but there's no disguise or fix for this. Well, Chris, you've been blessed with a phenomenal beard. I have not. I can't. There's no covering this up for me.
Well, here's the thing. You say blessed with a beard. What you don't know, Brandon, what many people probably don't know out there is, like, this is like, this takes careful thought, because if I just let the hair grow literally from eyebrow connected all the way across straight down, I would look like Wolfman. The only place it doesn't grow in thick is right up here.
That's
everywhere else. Unibrow. I got to shave like starting underneath my eyeball. Like, I'm not kidding, dude. Like, right here is where I start the shave.
Wild.
And then the neck, you know, the neck hair connects to the chest hair connects to the belly hair, of course, you know where this is headed.
You're just a giant hairball.
I would look like Bigfoot in the wild, but with a horseshoe.
You're like a strand or two away from Cousin It with the hat. That's pretty rolling much, around. Yeah. All right. So to kind of go along with this, before we get into the observations from the spring game and some of the other happenings that are going on, we're taking shots at ourselves, the bald, the neck, the old, the hair, it's all on the table.
Yeah.
But because of that, I don't think everybody could hear that because I turned off.
It is turned off. Yep.
TFG, ooh. The TFG of all TFGs. So, Chris. You talked about it last week, but I had not watched it yet. You went live last week without me while I was out sick, and you recorded it. You didn't do it live, and you made a few mistakes. Nothing egregious, nothing crazy, but then you compiled some of the bloopers into about a one-minute outtake reel, and it's the funniest thing I've ever seen you do.
I put up like a 17-minute video of just me talking about basketball, a little bit about football. But what people might not know is I was down here by myself in the basement for about an hour and a half trying to put this together. And I don't know what it is about not being live and not having somebody else there, not having an audience, like just sitting in a room talking to yourself. I talked about this on the show before. It was fucking awful. It was brutal. And so, I went through, like, I was looking at my phone. I'm like, shit, I did like 25 different takes and I made quite a few mistakes. And so I felt like I had to put them all together just to make myself feel better.
We're going to take a look at it. I'm going to give you a warning. This is not safe for work. Put the children to bed. There's some words in there you're not going to want them to hear.
You think doing a show by yourself is easy?
But
just watch this.
This is Chris Breiler at his finest right here, ladies and gentlemen. This is solid.
Was it a museum, library? I'm not sure what the hell that was. Their annual trip. So every year they take a team trip. Again, getting reps, need a couple of weeks. Excuse me. Moving the ball, playing defense, like all of the other. Moving the ball, playing defense. Motherfucker. And, we'll chop it up as. At the same time, fuck my ass. Four-star running back out of Ohio State. Jesus fucking Christ. Games that need. Fucking God. Starts with Isaiah. God. Ass fuck. But outside of that, that's all I got for you. So thanks for tuning in. If you watch this shit show, if you made your way all the way through it, kudos to you.
Dude, just brutal.
Oh my God, dude. You said the word ziz.
I don't know what a lot of that was. I just don't know.
That last sentence, it's like, if you made it all the way through the way that
I couldn't even get through that. I couldn't even get through that.
Dude, every time I watch it, I laughed way too hard. Way too hard.
I'm not sure. I don't know if it's because it's not live. There's nobody else. There's no interaction. But like, just, dude, it was very, very difficult to do that by myself. Clearly, yeah, as evidenced by the video.
I mean, we got a running back already from Ohio State. We've got, I mean, oh man, it was just, it's really good. Well done, Christopher. Well done.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was never going to play that without your permission. But as soon as you were like, we could do, I'm doing it. I was like, everybody's got to see this. Everyone's got to see this. It's too good.
That's just me on my A game, doing what I do, doing my thing, making content, you know, for the people.
Dude, the one you just stopped and stared for like 10 seconds. It's like, man.
It was brutal.
All right. Let me regather myself. All right. So Saturday was the spring game, Chris.
It was.
I was nice and toasty up in the box. You were down on the field freezing your ass off. Got some good shots, though. And the game, I mean, for what it's worth, the game was pretty good. It ended up being pretty competitive. Obviously, it was 22-21. The Mays team won it on a late two-point conversion call by Mike Hart. It was funny. He mentioned in the press conference afterwards, like, yeah, pretty easy to go for it in the spring game. I don't know if you get that decision down to, you know, down one against the Penn State or something, but in the spring game, roll the dice, you win it, you lose it for steaks or hot dogs and a little bit of bragging rights. And
yeah,
turned out to be a Mays team win 22-21. Chris, before we get into maybe some of the specifics, because I do have a list that I kept while the game was going on. I put an article up about that actually at halftime of the game a few days ago. I have a list of other things that I was going to address too. Just like, I don't know, thoughts about being back down on the field. I know it was a crappy day. It was super cold. Obviously, it wasn't anywhere near a full stadium, but
yeah,
you're back on the field at the Big House, man.
Yeah, well, it started with the tailgate, and I do want to give a huge shout-out to Wolverine State Brewing Company for once again coming through, stocking us with beer. We had barbecue out there. Yes, the weather was cold and shitty, but I don't know. Throughout the afternoon, we probably had 25, 30 different people stop by, say what's up, have a beer or two. And then,
people from Ohio, Indiana, and Delaware.
Delaware. Yeah. Correct. Not just for the tailgate, obviously. They wanted to go to the spring game. But yeah, we hung out there for a while and then made my way back to the Big House like I do every fall Saturday. And yeah, being back down on the field, I think was, you know, it was nice. It was just, it was odd with the scoreboard construction and the fact that fans were only on one side and there wasn't many people in there, cold and rainy. It was just, you know, not the typical spring game atmosphere that I'm used to. But like I said before, anytime, you know, you can be inside the Big House watching the football players out there doing their thing, it's, you know, it's a treat. And I try to not take it for granted anytime I'm in that position. So yeah, try to get as many photos as I could, soak it in. And I enjoyed it. Froze my ass off, was cold, miserable, but happy.
It's like midway through the third quarter. I'm like, hey, Chris, how's it going down there? He's like, I'm at home on the couch. No, it wasn't. wasn't quite that egregious. But, dude, my little five-minute walk back to the car, I was like, I about had enough of this. And you were
it was cold, dude. It was cold.
You were down there the whole time. It's just a spring game. It's not like it's for all the marbles or anything. So effort's always appreciated down there as you battle the elements. Because it kind of like you get – I don't know, man. Out of all the home games last year, how many did you get that were comfortable? Because it was like hot as balls early and then cold late.
It might have been Penn State might have been the most comfortable, but I was also a little bit drunk during that game. And so I don't even know that I fully remember, you know, enjoying the elements. I was just trying to snap whatever I could. But yeah, it went from like hot as shit to like The game that stands out to me the most is the Illinois game. The Illinois game was absolutely brutally cold, windy. Yeah. I mean, you know, the Jake Moody game winner, I think, you know, wide receivers having trouble catching the ball for obvious reasons. I mean, it was cold, man.
So, as I said, pretty competitive game, but a lot of dudes, and this was an article I just put up a day or two ago, a lot of guys making plays and doing things that that's just not going to happen in the fall. I mean, like, great for Peyton O'Leary to have a 6-catch, 126-yard day, win the game with a 2-catch. Like, is he even going to see the field in the fall? Like, I don't know. I know he's on scholarship now, and he did do some nice things in that spring game. But, I mean, ultimately, and this is not meant to be a shot, but if you're having to count and play walk-ons, like, something's not quite right. At a place like Michigan, it just shouldn't happen all that often. But we will see. But kind of along those lines, man, I put an article up about this. I counted 14 guys who are either going to be very heavy contributors or are at least a little intriguing for some reason that were in street clothes. And, you know, that obviously, like, changed the feel of the game in a big way. Michigan's whole calling card and everything they hang their hat on is running the ball, and both Corum and Edwards were out. Will Johnson is, like, everybody's favorite young player. He was out. AJ, you know, me and you have kind of talked about him for a couple years now, like his role, he can do a lot of things. He didn't play. I mean, it was kind of across the board. You name like lots of the big time starters and they didn't play. Chris, from down on the field, I just wonder, like, did it feel very different? I mean, not seeing Junior Colson, not seeing Corbin Edwards. Not, I mean, obviously it did, but like, what was the action and the energy like down there being closer to it?
No, I mean, I expected it. I knew, you know, I knew most of those guys were going to be out going into the game. And like we talked about heading into it, like, you know, pretty much every guy that you mentioned, almost every person that you mentioned there is a known commodity. And so really I went into it with the mindset of, you know, who are we going to get to see? Who's really going to stand out this year? And, you know, I think the running back Benjamin Hall had a great afternoon. Peyton O'Leary obviously had a great afternoon. Zeke Berry did some really good things out there. So some of these young guys that you really don't get to see or haven't been able to see were able to shine and get some things done. And in terms of whether or not Peyton O'Leary is going to make a big impact on the upcoming season, I don't know. But I know that when you go out and you play well during the spring game, that probably is going to carry through your summer and into fall camp, and he's going to arrive confident. And what I took away from the spring game, you mentioned all the guys that were out, with everybody that was in, just how loaded Michigan is everywhere. I mean, there is depth and talent everywhere on this team. I mean, the running back position is probably like six guys deep. The quarterback position, the fact that Tuttle was, you know, the presumptive QB2 there. And then you've got, a guy like Alex Orji. You got Davis Warren. I mean, they are deep at so many different positions on this football team. I'm just excited to see what it translates to in the fall.
Chris, I want to do something kind of like a speed dating version of talking about these dudes that were out. There were 14 of them, so I'm going to say the name. I'm going to say about a sentence or two. You give it to me right back, and then we'll just move on to the next guy. Yeah. So I don't know if people read the article or if they really – because I just saw somebody say, like, what about Zach Zinner? Was he out there? So I do think there are some people who don't even really realize who was in and who was out. And this is not – everybody, but these are the ones that I went through and circled off the roster that are, like, again, either intriguing for a reason or definitely will be on the field a ton in 2023. So first is Cole Cabana. He's a freshman. Running back 3 is kind of open. People were excited. Didn't play.
Yeah, didn't play, but he's one of those guys that RB3 spot, I think, as of now, is still open. I think a lot of us thought maybe CJ Stokes was going to lock that down.
Also didn't play.
Didn't solidify that last year. So Cole Cabana, I mean, he's got the afterburners. He's quick. You know, I just think he is a guy that I'm excited to see during the fall. But yeah, it's a bummer we didn't get to see him in the spring, because I think he's one of those guys that really could have, you know, stood out during a game like that.
Worth noting, he had a leg brace on from like his freaking hip down to his ankle. I mean, this thing was like a full, you know, he's doing like the full
bionic.
Peg leg walk. Like, whatever he did to his leg, it looks moderately, you know, serious. I mean, I don't know if he's out for the year or anything like that, but for right now, he was nowhere near ready to play. Junior Colson, I mean, known commodity junior linebacker. You pair Ernest Hausman with him, they're going to be studs.
Yeah, I mean, again, known commodity with Junior Colson. We know he's probably going to be, you know, leading tackler on the defense this upcoming season. So, you know he was going through something I saw on social media. I think he had his leg in like a soft cast or something was going on. So I knew he was going to play going into the game.
Blake Corum, Donovan Edwards. I don't think you need to say much. It looked like Donovan could have played. I mean, I don't know what he was out for, but
you know what? Just the best running back duo in the country. You know what you have with those guys. They'll be ready come fall. No need to see him out there. And I sent you a picture that was on social media of JJ McCarthy for that exact reason, because I don't know that fans realize, but JJ McCarthy was like, based on the photo that I saw, it looked like a turned ankle at best, but could have ended up into being something much, much worse. And that's what you worry about with a game like that. But we talked about that before. You know, you can't just sit these guys until week one. They've got to go out there and play and compete. But
real quick thoughts on German Green. I mean, this is a guy, he's a special teamer. He's been kind of a backup rotational guy. Obviously, big twin brother Jamon off to the NFL. German's still on the roster, but didn't see number 33 out there. I don't know if much changes for his expectation or his role this year. I'm kind of curious about that, and he wasn't out there to play at all.
Yeah, I still see him as a special teams guy, but you talk about how important special teams is, and I think for Michigan, particularly last season, they put a lot of emphasis on it, a lot of focus on it. It's a privilege. Guys like Colson Loveland are out there playing on special teams as well. They put an emphasis on it. I think that's where he's going to do most of his work, but yeah, another guy that we didn't get to see.
Ladarius Henderson, the big versatile transfer from Arizona State, not even actually on the roster yet. I believe he's still taking care of some stuff at ASU, but I mean, that he might end up being a starter, and he wasn't there for the spring, and we'll see what
according to Jake Butt, he will be a starter. Jake Butt had put out his depth chart of the offensive line and who he thinks is going to start where. And he's got two transfers starting up there up front, and one of them at left tackle is Ladarius Henderson. So, yeah, we didn't get to see him. Would have been nice to see that. But again, when it comes to the offensive line, Carson Barnhart, Trent Day Jones, Trevor Keegan, all these guys were out there. The depth across the board.
Let me go ahead and throw the other two in there right now. I'm going alphabetical, but Drake Nugent, I would assume, is the other starter that Jake Butt listed. And then Miles Hinton, the 6'7", 320-pound. You can move him around a little bit. So Nugent didn't play, and neither did Hinton. They are on the roster, but if they've got a thigh bruise, they're sitting out of this thing. So it's not it's no cause for concern as far as we know, but those – you really might have had 3/5 of what could be a dominating offensive line not even on the field for them. I mean, your guards are as locked in as any position on the team. Zinner and Keegan, like, that's all day. It seems like Nugent's a lock. You're figuring out the two tackle spots, and Hinton and Henderson will certainly be in the mix there. So,
guys out there. You know, I think it was on BTN, but I remember hearing Jake Butt say, and there's a lot of truth to it, that Michigan's, however the depth chart shakes out for the offensive line, whoever the second unit is, that unit in its entirety would be a starting unit on more than half of the college football teams that are out there. So that just speaks to how good this offensive line is. You talk about even at the center position, Greg Crippen, Raheem Anderson, they are deep at every single position on the offensive line. So, yeah, I mean, you don't want to see any injuries, but if they do run into some injuries up front, they've got somebody that's ready and willing to step in and do a great job.
Mentioned him a little bit ago, but AJ Henning, you know, he's coming up on his senior season now. Still kind of wondering exactly what he's going to be asked to do with Ronnie Bell gone. I mean, the dude's made a bunch, quite a few big plays at Michigan, but he just doesn't get a lot of snaps. I don't know what that'll look like this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. You know, it's hard to say where exactly he fits in, because you've got guys like Cornelius Johnson, Darius Clemens, at the wide receiver position. Is he a slot guy? Is Tyler Morris getting those reps? Roman Wilson. There you go. Roman Wilson, I think he's going to be the leading receiver this year. I think he's the best weapon they have at wide out. But we've seen AJ Henning mostly on special teams last year. I think that's probably, again, where he's going to do the bulk of his damage this upcoming season, but would certainly love to see him be factored into the offense somehow, because we've seen on jet sweeps and in short yardage situations that he can be really good. I mean, he's quick, he's fast, he's got everything you need.
Will Johnson might be in the running for playing the most snaps on the entire team this year. He's never going to come off the field, but you know, big, yep. Not a big deal to not see him out there other than
already viewed as a top 10 draft pick by some of the analysts out there. So there's not much you need to say about him.
You just want to see him because he looks dope in the two jersey and he's real just good. He's a star. I mean, he's a star. So yeah. Didn't come in with the fanfare of a Will Johnson, but just as important to the secondary, makes a ton of plays. Rod Moore again. Yeah. I mean, he's Rod Moore to me, and I don't really know him that well. And I have this is just like how I view him, like gamer. He's a gamer, dude. He could have like a busted foot, but by the time Saturday rolls around, he's gonna play. So I don't care one bit that he wasn't out there for the spring game, as long as it's not like a bad injury, because that dude's gonna be so solid every time he's on the field.
Yeah, he has built himself up to a known commodity on the Michigan defense, one that's probably going to be top five in the country, and that's a credit to the work that he's put in, but not surprised that we didn't see him.
You just mentioned Tyler Morris. I mean, I was looking at these numbers. It's not a lot to brag about, but he led the freshman wide receivers last year with a whopping 3 catches. Amarian Walker and Darius Clemens only had
in this offense. That's pretty impressive. Yeah.
They only had one apiece, the big bodied 6'3", 6'4", then you've got, 5'10", Tyler Morris.
I think he made one or two big plays against Illinois, and that was a game that Michigan needed.
I'm interested to see what he looks like as a soft. They all played a similar snap count, those three, Walker, Morris, and Clemens at receiver. And none of them really did anything because they just, Michigan doesn't throw the ball a lot in the first place, and they certainly weren't going to be throwing it when those guys were in the game. But I'm interested to see Tyler Morris as a sophomore.
Same. I mean, high school teammate with J.J. McCarthy before McCarthy went down to
IMG.
IMG before he went to IMG. Not a flashy guy, but a guy that I think is just going to make plays when you need him to make plays. Kind of the way that Ronnie Bell was early in his career. Not a lot of flash there, but was a guy that just worked himself into becoming a reliable target. I see that from Tyler Morris.
Dare I say Amon-Ra St. Brown light. Okay, go over the middle.
I like it. I like it.
Catch your little 8-yard in routes and fall down. Don't take a tackle. That's where he can live, and you can give him a short one, turn it into a little bit of a longer game. Yeah. I like what he brings, but we'll see. Because you named 3 or 4 guys that I would think would be ahead of him, but we'll see what it looks like with snap count. CJ Stokes, before the game, he's who I would have said is RB3. Now I'm not so sure. I'm really not so sure because Mullings looked great. Benjamin Hall looked great. Mike Hart was heaping praise on Benjamin Hall. And we saw what happened with Stokes last year. Had a burst, looked good, but he put the ball in the turf, man, and he found himself on the bench for a long time. So I'm that running back, I know it's just the third position on the depth chart, but it's intriguing because there's a lot of guys there that can do it.
Well, it's intriguing because we saw what happened in 2022 when Blake Corum went down, how important it is to have that 1-2 punch. But I mean, in terms of who they're entering the upcoming season with, Blake Corum, Donovan Edwards, CJ Stokes, Benjamin Hall, Cole Cabana, Khalil Mullings, deep, deep, deep at that position with a lot of different guys that can do different things in short yardage. They can get out route runners. They can catch the ball. Diverse group of guys, but I mean, I think it was Donovan Edwards that said it, that he and Blake Corum both plan on winning the Heisman. I think they're just going to cut it in half and split it together. And I know that's a little bit of hyperbole, but to be honest, those two guys are good enough to be in the Heisman conversation if they were the lead running back at any other program. They've got that kind of talent. They've got to split reps. I don't know that that's a great thing for them, but it's a great thing for the team, and it's a great thing for the Michigan fan base to have that, no doubt.
I mean, if one of them was at Michigan without the other, they'd be fine, and they would be in the Heisman discussion because we pretty much saw that with Blake by himself last year. So,
and I have zero doubts that if Donovan was playing that role, he would have been in that discussion behind. And give credit to the offensive line, too. We're talking about the O-line. 2-time Joe Moore Award winning offensive line, the first offensive line unit in the country to do that. Shout out to Sharone Moore. But once again, this stable of running backs is going to be running behind an NFL caliber offensive line. And so you should see a lot of production.
And last but not least, not much needs to be said about Zach Zinner either.
Great haircut.
He'll probably be in the discussion for one of the best interior linemen in the country and be one of the first drafted next year. So,
yeah,
not much that needs to be said about him. But again, dude, I just named 14 guys, and really Cole Cabana and German Green are the only two we talked about that CJ Stokes, I guess, too, that aren't starters. I mean, just about all of the other ones are starting or playing starter type reps the whole season. I mean, maybe the verdict's out on Tyler Morris, maybe the verdict's out on Miles Hinton. We don't know, but like those guys are starter level players. And so that again speaks to what Chris said, loaded. They're just loaded, man. You're going to be able to put together 10 linemen, like you said, 5 and 5 that could probably start at multiple schools. The running back room is deep. The receiver room is deep. They're going to be so good. They're going to be favored in every game. They're going to come out of the gate winning like 60-0 their first 3-4 weeks. And it's just going to be building on what they did the last two seasons. Now, Chris, I was just about to mention the tight end position, but I want to go to one of my points on my notes here. Can you just give me a quick, you gave it to me when we were in the RV, but can you give me, or when we talked after the game, can you give me a quick description on one AJ Barner?
I mean, I'm excited for that dude. I wasn't sure what he was going to be coming in to Michigan. I know that, you know, everybody's high on Colston Loveland, but I was down on the field, man, got to see him perform. Dude looks like a beast. I mean, he just looks every bit the part of a premier tight end that you would want. He's got the swag, the drip, the eye paint a little bit, rocking the visor. I mean, the dude, and he can catch the ball pretty damn well as well. He can block and do everything you need him to do at the tight end position. So between him and Colston Loveland, I'm excited for what they've got there as well.
It was not a question mark because I'm extremely high on Colston Loveland. I think he's going to have a phenomenal year, but now I saw Barner in action. We saw Hibner with a long catch and run. Tight end possession's good. Position's good. It's good. You got two guys in Loveland who's kind of more of your receiver up the seam athletic threat. And then Barner, who's big bruiser, but he can get out and make some plays in the passing game too. They're good there.
But I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm pretty sure Luke Schoonmaker was the second leading receiver on this team last year. And so, you know, you should expect to get more of the same this year. Michigan's the type of offense where not only are they run heavy, but they utilize the tight ends a lot. And when you look at guys like Colston Loveland and AJ Barner, those are two guys that can certainly help fill the role, the void that Luke Schoonmaker left behind. And I think Michigan's going to be just fine at that position.
I believe Schoonmaker had 35 receptions. 35 receptions was second on the team, 3 ahead of Cornelius Johnson, and behind only Ronnie Bell, 62. Loveland, if he doesn't have 30 grabs this year, I'll be shocked. Yep. Shocked. And then Barner probably picks up the slack and catches 15 or 20. That would be my guess on how the season shakes out. But he showed that he could, I mean, in a pinch, he could be your number one tight end, no problem.
Yes.
Like, no problem. And, you know, you're not going to quite get the athlete that you get with Loveland, but he's bigger. He's, I would guess, a better blocker. He's been doing it for a handful of years, and he's, you know, he's more
veteran guy. Yeah,
he's done it. So I think you'd be just fine. One of the other things that really kind of stood out to me early, and I know there was a little bit of a buzz about it in the press box. Chris, I know you observed it down there. I think Jack Tuttle's your number two, and I don't think it's close.
If it's based on what we saw during the spring game, it sure as hell looks like it. And you could tell he's a guy that, you know, has just been in a Division I program for a while, carries himself. Like, I could hear him down on the field, sort of hurrying the guys to the offensive line, and just the, you know, the cadence and everything about the way he conducted himself down there. It sure screamed like QB2, but we've said it a number of times. Now we talk about depth on this team, JJ McCarthy, Jack Tuttle, Alex Orji, Davis Warren. They've got guys that can come in and perform if one goes down. You don't want to see that happen, but man, do they have a ton of depth and guys that bring different things to the table in that quarterback room.
I see Andy saying there's no way. Well, there is based on how they played. It was JJ and Jack Tuttle for the whole first half. That's
now QB1, that
QB2.
Now, I don't know that necessarily, I mean, to me, common sense would say those are your top two quarterbacks. If that's how they threw them out there. But you never know if it's, you know, you never know what's going on through Harbaugh's head and, you know, how he's trying to push guys in a certain direction to, but again, Tuttle, even if you have questions about it and you think Davis Warren should be QB2, Tuttle certainly looked the part. I mean, he looked effective in the times he was out there, could get out, could run. He was taking some big hits by, you know, the opposing defense. He's a tough guy. You know, I think he'd be just fine.
Yeah. I just wonder if Alex Orji's quite ready for it yet or not.
Yeah.
Davis Warren, you know, certainly looks like he, I mean, in a pinch, he would be fine. But, you know, that's a former walk-on, now a scholarship player. I don't know. It's going to be – it's a lot of, like, who's battling for the backup, second, third, fourth stringers, because the starters are just about set across the board, and I guess that's a good problem to have. Chris, I wanted to ask you, too. I know he's already kind of become – C.J. Frazier, go ahead and write it down here in a minute. We are 35 minutes in. The new Andrell Anthony, Chris,
happens
to be sporting the same number. And I know he was Peyton O'Leary got the best of him a few times on the final drive. But, dude, how good does Omarion Walker look on the hoof, man? That dude looks like he is ready to play a lot of football at Michigan.
He looks like the guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The way he looks and the way he carries himself out there, you could definitely tell he was getting cooked a little bit out there and he's got to work on his footwork. There's got to be some improvements made, no doubt, throughout the spring. He's got to put in some work over the summer and then obviously into fall camp. But if he can put it together, he's got all the physical tools you need to, you know, the size, the speed, the agility, everything you need to succeed at that position. I think he's just got to get reps. And this was his first time really, you know, out in the big house. You have an opposing offense in front of you and you've really got to try to, you know, it's as close to live game action as you're going to get. And I think we could see some of the benefits. I think he recovered a fumble. Maybe he was active on the defensive side, but he also got burned a couple times.
All right, Chris. Michigan's playing a game tomorrow against Maryland. Who's your starting cornerback opposite Will Johnson?
Jesus. Right now, I'm probably going – I might go McBurrows.
That's what I would do, I think, too.
You know, just based on experience, he's played that position. You know, I know there was a lot of hype about Omarion Walker, but it's clear to me that he needs work in that position, and so we'll see. Zeke Berry's another guy that I thought, you know, made a lot of plays out there, was pretty impressive. So I probably go with experience at this point, go Jaden McBurrows.
Jaden McBurrows came up and tackled Benjamin Hall hard in the open field on like a running back swing pass. He's a little stockier. He's nowhere near as long or lanky as Will Johnson or Jamon Green from last year or Vincent Gray going back a couple seasons. Like he looks a little different than the corners Michigan has trotted out there in recent years. DJ Turner would be another one. He was pretty long and lanky.
Yeah.
Jaden McBurrows is built more like a running back and he's physical and he's played before a little bit. He's been in the program for a while now, but
got a chip on his shoulder. He feels like it's his time, you know,
battled through injuries, wants it as bad as, if, you know, probably anybody on the team because he's been dinged up. So,
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see that. I mean, Omarion Walker's kind of the, you know, the ball of clay right now that's got all the physical tools, but he looked a little uncomfortable at times.
Yeah. But I mean, it should be expected. You know, that's
the spring
game.
That's
a difficult, it's a spring game, and that's a difficult position to play, man. And when you're trying to make that transition and you're new to it and you're playing against guys who are, you know, Power Five caliber wide receivers. I mean, you're going to have to learn a little bit. And I don't think it's going to quite be what we saw to Mike Samer still, where he makes the switch and year one is absolutely phenomenal, you know, but I think he's got time to grow.
Well, there's an interesting point, dude. If you absolutely had to, you might throw old Mikey over there at the other cornerback spot.
You could. And there's no doubt.
Let a Cody Jones or let a Rod Moore pick up the slack at the nickel position. And then play your two veteran safeties back there. And so, I mean, you've got options. Michigan's not gonna consider that a weakness necessarily, but it's gonna be interesting to see that other corner spot. That's really been the spot we've been talking about since the season ended. That's been really the only one where you're not pretty sure. I guess the tackle spots as well, but you've got, you know, in Trente Jones and Carson Barnhart, you've got two guys who started at right tackle all year last year, so you know you're fine there. Just might not know who it is. I guess it's left tackle and corner. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's literally it. And you've got really, really good options at left tackle and, you know, some talented but inexperienced guys at corner. So it's going to be interesting to see. There's not a lot of starting battles going on.
Just to circle back to the quarterback conversation, I'm looking down at the stat sheet right now, and Davis Warren did have the best day out of all four. Yeah. He was 8 of 13 for 163 yards, didn't throw a touchdown, had a pick, but certainly the most productive out of the four quarterbacks. And, yeah, Tuttle, 6 for 12, one pick, 57 yards, had a sack as well, no touchdowns. So, yeah,
And ran the ball pretty well.
Ran the ball pretty well, showed that he was tough. And again, you could just down on the field watching him sort of get everybody in the huddle, get everybody to the line. You could tell that he had the experience along with him. But QB2 might be a wide open competition going into the fall. And I like that because I think out of the three guys, Warren, Tuttle, and Orgy, there's a little bit to like about all of those guys.
We did a lot of talking about the offense, I feel like, just now, Chris, and we talked defense too, I guess the cornerback position and the depth a little bit, but I'll tell you one guy, he didn't play a whole lot because you kind of already know what you're getting with him. They got some of the younger dudes in there, rotational guys, but Jalen Harrell made several plays at the beginning of the game. You know, he touched off on JJ a couple times, I think, if it was a real game situation, he might have recorded a couple of sacks. He looks like he's ready to take a leap. Obviously, Kenneth Grant was the first pick taken in the draft. I thought Rayshon Penny, dude, he put – who was it? Andrew Gentry he put on his ass.
Yes.
Like, aggressively.
And had to let out because obviously he can't hit the quarterback. But yeah, then Andrew Gentry is not a small guy.
It's a 6'8", 315-pounder who was on ice skates, dude.
Moved him like a child.
Yeah. So that Mason Graham didn't play a whole lot, and you've got Chris Jenkins didn't play. Dude, this Rayshon D line Penny. Now, this D line now is also Josiah Stewart was phenomenal. The transfer from Coastal Carolina looked speedy and like he was going to be a problem bending off the
Ernest Hausman at the linebacker position. I mean, they've got guys that. Outside of that one corner position, which I think when it comes down to it, I think they're going to be fine. It's just there's a question mark of who the guy's going to be. But outside of that, they are solid everywhere. They're just rock solid everywhere. And I think that, you know, I put out an article about this and, you know, Jim Harbaugh, he was at that pep rally prior to the spring game. But, you know, he said that.
How'd that pep rally go, by the way?
I don't know. I didn't hear anybody who attended it. I don't know. I'm pretty not good. Really sure.
Some people are still waiting in line, I think, right now.
But anyway, in any event, you know, Jim Harbaugh said that as of now, you know, whatever the date was, April 1st, that this is the best team he's had in, you know, the entire time he's been at the University of Michigan, most complete team, the best team. And, you know, I think most fans believe that as well. So it's right in line with what people think about this team. A lot of people believe that this was, you know, this is Jim Harbaugh's best team since he's been at Michigan. Given what the landscape looks like around college football right now, Ohio State's got some questions at the quarterback position. We know that they're going to be talented, but you don't have that juggernaut out there like the Bama of old or a Clemson. You know, it seems like it's wide open for Michigan right now, given who they have on this roster, to win a national championship this year. This feels like the year to do it. You're coming off of two back-to-back Big Ten titles. You've made the college football playoffs twice, lost in the semifinals twice. Michigan has to take a step forward this year, and taking a step forward means not just getting to the national championship game, but if this team gets there, they got to win it.
Yeah. We talked about the running back position having two absolute superstars and a third. The battle is for the third running back, and you've got four or five guys there. We talked about how the tight ends look a lot deeper all of a sudden. We talked about how the offensive line probably could have a second group start at most of the schools in the Big Ten and maybe around the country. And I honestly think the D-line might be the strongest group on the team, which seems crazy. But when you can go, you can literally take any combination of the starters and the backups, if you even want to call them that, and have a formidable group. So on the edges, you've got Braden McGregor, Derek Moore, Josiah Stewart, and I'm blanking on the fourth one all of a sudden.
Who did you list off?
Jalen Harrell, who I just named. Okay. So Jalen Harrell, Braden McGregor, Derek Moore, Josiah Stewart. In the middle, you've got Rayshon Penny, Kenneth Grant, Mason Graham. Oh, and just Chris Jenkins. I mean, like, you've got
who Mazi Smith said he thinks will be better than Mazi was this upcoming year. So
it's, and then you add a guy like Ernest Hausman to that linebacker core. So that means out of your linebackers, you're going to have Jimmy Rolder, Nakai Hill-Green, Mike Barrett, Junior Colson, and now Ernest Hout. Like, three of those dudes aren't playing that much.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have two guys that are in pretty much all the time, and you'll probably rotate one other guy or those other three guys in at the other spot, depending on the formation, down in distance, stuff like that. I mean, like, I don't expect Junior Colson and Hausman to, like, ever come off the field. So it's going to be that third spot, probably a Mike Barrett. If you've got a running back or a linebacker trio of Junior Colson, Ernest Hausman, and now Mike Barrett as a fifth-year senior type, I mean, dude, I believe Jim Harbaugh wholeheartedly if he says this is his best team he's ever had, and you know the last 2 years they just all they did was make the playoffs. So like,
yeah,
what a time! What a time!
And Darren brings up a good point, Keyshawn Bennett, and then you also have TJ Guy who didn't play, who's another guy on the edge. You know, so depth,
yeah,
potential. I think. Overall point being is that this team, to me, hands down, is the best team in the Big Ten right now. And I haven't, even last year when I felt confident about it, I still kind of gave the edge to Ohio State. To me, I don't think there's any question right now that Michigan has top to bottom the best roster in the Big Ten Conference. I'm expecting them to beat Ohio State again. I think that they're going to slip up at least once, but expecting another Big Ten championship. And then you get into the college football playoff, and if I'm correct, it's the last year that it's going to be just four teams in the college football playoff.
You know what? You know what really tells you how deep Michigan is? Because, Chris, you and I do this. I just did it with – I forgot to say Jalen Harrell. He might be the best one in that group, and I forgot him. You were naming receivers earlier. You forgot Roman Wilson.
Forgot Roman Wilson, who I predicted was going to be the top receiver this year.
Andy Schiltz right here. He's like, now let's do the safeties. He forgot R.J. Bolton. Might be the best one. you can almost do that.
And we didn't mention Mekari Page, who got a lot of reps last year. Solid defender. So everywhere. Yeah. They're so loaded that we're forgetting about key contributors. Either that or we're just bad at our job. Probably a little bit of both.
It's maybe both. But when you're rattling dudes off, anyway, I think it just speaks to you forget, like, damn, that guy's on the team still. Like, and he's going to play a ton, and he's maybe one of the better players or a veteran or a leader. He brings this or he brings that. It's across the board. The only spot that it's not is corner. That's it. And left tackle, like I said, there's just not an obvious guy. I think we named it before. I mean, you've got Ladarius Henderson. You've got Jeff Percy. You've got maybe Tristan Bounds. I mean, I don't know. He hasn't played much. He doesn't seem like he's quite ready. But he certainly has the frame for it, and we'll see where he's at in year. I think this is his third season. Maybe Miles Hinton can kick out and play left tackle. He hasn't really done it before, but he's certainly big enough. He's a former five-star kid. Yeah, it's really a lot of fun to go down this roster and just think about who's going to be on the field at any given time this season.
And I'm still not discounting the fact that both Carson Barnhart and Trent A. Jones earned a starting role on this offensive line. I mean, those were both guys that played during the spring game. Trent A. Jones, I know he got hurt last year. I think it was during Indiana game, if I remember correctly. But he was a starter prior to that. Carson Barnhart came in, played extremely well. I think those guys are versatile. They can go from left to right. Again, depth everywhere, options everywhere. This is a team that's built to win a national championship this year.
Chris, this is I was having like an internal discussion with myself the other day about the tackle positions because of the two transfers that came in and their size compared to like a Carson Barnhart and a Trent A. Jones, who are obviously really, really good, but neither of them are like the hulking, super long tackle prospects. Like, in my opinion, just body type alone, they're built more like guards. They're like 6'3", maybe 6'4". They're not super long, little, you know, very athletic, so they can get out and pull, which you do with your guards a lot more. You personally, do you get hung up at all on, like, I just think back to like creating players in NCAA. It's like, all right, I want my center 6'2", 6'3". I want my guard 6'3", 6'4". I want my tackle 6'6", 6'7". Like, obviously, Trent A. Jones, Carson Barnhart are not 6'6", 6'7". But they were part of the best O-line in the country last year. They can do the job. How much does that factor in when you look at a guy like Henderson and you look at a guy like Hinton, who are 6'6", 6'7"?
I mean, you look down at their numbers, you look down at the measurables, and it's eye candy. It's like, yep, those are the guys that I want. But then I thought more about this as, you know, we've had these conversations, and I remember watching Carson Barnhart last year played very well. Trent A. Jones was pretty damn good until he got injured. And so these are guys who have been with the program, to your point, part of a Joe Moore award winning offensive line unit. I mean, they've been in the program for a while. I have a lot of confidence in those guys. And to be quite honest, didn't see Miles Hinton, didn't see Ladarius Henderson. Yeah. So not here in the spring. You know, part of it's also how well you mesh. You play as one unit, and these guys have been around. They've got the camaraderie. They've got the brotherhood. I don't know how much of that factors into it, but I got to believe it plays a part. Sure. And if it's an important part, then I think you got to look at guys like Carson Barnhart and Trent A. Jones as legitimate, you know, starting offensive linemen.
And last thing on this O-line, because there are just so many bodies that you can plug and play, it seems like. Do you even remotely consider maybe like moving Trevor Keegan to left tackle and finding a left guard? Just you don't even bother with it.
I'm not messing with my two guards. Keegan, okay. Zinner, locked in, and then I'll figure everything else out outside of that because there's plenty of options there. But I think that middle of Nugent, Zinner, Keegan, I think that's really nice. That's pretty much settled on. And, you know, it almost feels not fair to just pencil in Drake Nugent. Look, I know he was, you know, he was a captain at Stanford, and I know he was considered one of the best centers in the country last year. I think that was Pro Football Focus had put him out as like number three or number four on the list overall. But Raheem Anderson is pretty good. Greg Crippen, yeah, pretty good. Those, you know, Crippen's got the relationship with JJ. They played at IMG together. Raheem Anderson, very talented center. And so you're going to have a battle at that center position. I think whoever they end up with, they're going to be just fine. But again, it just speaks to, we're talking about moving pieces around. And do you plug a guy in here and do you do this? That's the luxury you have when you have this much depth.
I don't think I would do it either, but Trevor Keegan did bump out to left tackle last year when Hayes was hurt, and Gio Elhadi slid in at left guard. And
another guy that we haven't even
mentioned. Yeah, we didn't even say. I mean, yeah, I think it's because he's a guard. I mean, he's not supplanting Keegan or Zinner, but he's there when you need him. He can play both sides. He helps if you need to, you know, if things just aren't quite working. You can put Trevor Keegan at left tackle and feel good about it. I mean, he's not, that's not his position of the future. It's obviously not where he's played at Michigan, but he can do it. And then you still do have Gio who can step in. And I mean, he started four or five games last year, I think, while Keegan was out. So the amount of bodies across the board at all these different positions is something that hasn't been at Michigan since Jim Harbaugh's been there and forever. I mean, forever, this kind of depth. It's crazy, dude. I cannot wait for the season to get here.
Which is why it makes sense that he's saying this is the best team he's had since he's been there. And when you look at the way the last 2 years have gone, if you're a Michigan fan, I mean, he did also put the disclaimer in. It doesn't mean that they won't have a letdown, right? And well, so I think you got to keep that. The expectation at Michigan now is beat Ohio State, win a big. Granted, that has always been the expectation, but let's be real. Most people knew that wasn't going to happen going into the season just based on what Michigan had. Now, That is realistic. That is reality in Ann Arbor. Beat Ohio State, win the conference championship, and then get to the college football playoff. And I think given everything they have, everything we've spent the last, 30, 40 minutes talking about, the expectation this year should be national championship.
Jim Harbaugh has been around the game enough. He knows you don't play the games in March or April or on paper. So, you know, a key injury here, knock on wood, you don't want that. And you never know. But right now, looking at things top to bottom, this team is a machine, and they are going to be a force.
Again, knock on wood, they're going to have a lot of injuries for this roster to really be impacted in a significant way, just based on the depth they have everywhere. And so I think either way you cut it, Michigan is primed to make a national championship run. And quite frankly, that is the last box that Jim Harbaugh needs to check off before the rebuild is officially complete.
Yeah.
At the some would already argue that it is because it's beat Ohio State, win the Big Ten, and Michigan has proven they can do that over the last 2 years. But when you talk about what the expectation was when Harbaugh took over the head coaching position in 2015, the only thing that he hasn't done to this point is win a national championship. And if he can do it this year, you know, what an incredible, you know, from where it started to that almost rock bottom in 2020, 2-4, didn't win a single home game. I know that it was a COVID year. I know that the stadiums were empty, but to where this program is now, it's just been an incredible turnaround, and all the credit to Jim Harbaugh and the world for not just the way the roster looks, but for the coaching staff that he's also put together as well. This is an elite program everywhere you look.
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely is. There's no doubt. I mean, yeah, when you think back to when he was hired, it was like, you know, starting at the least important, building your way up. It was like blowout cupcakes, because Michigan wasn't even doing that before he got there. Blowout cupcakes, beat all the teams in the Big Ten you should beat all the time. You can't have a slip up against Rutgers. You can't have a slip up against Maryland. You can't have a slip up against Indiana. You got to beat those teams. He's done that. Pull even and ahead of Michigan State. He's got like a toe over the line. I mean, he's done that against Michigan State. You know, the Mel Tucker stuff is still there a little bit, but I think that's
gotta go dead. To East Lansing and beat the shit out of him. Yeah, I mean, it can't even be a close game this year. They have to go into East Lansing and do more of the same. They've really got to put their foot down on the throat of the Spartans.
Start being competitive with Ohio State. Check. You beat them twice in a row and whoop their ass in Columbus. Yeah. Win the Big Ten. Check. Did it twice. Make the playoff. Check. Win a title. That's the only one. That's the only one. If you built that ladder up, that's what it looked like. And he's done all of them except for one at this point. And
let's be honest. Really, when he was hired, we all collectively, you, me, the entire fan base, we were already kind of penciling in national championship. It wasn't a matter of if, it was just when was he going to do it? And then I think, you know, after year 2, 3, and 4, it started to become apparent that this wasn't going to go as quickly and smoothly as everybody had hoped and thought it would be. But now that we're here, he's entering his 9th season. The last 2 years have been just incredible to be able to cover it as a, you know, part of the fan base, to be able to experience it. It really does feel like it's not just fan speak. This feels like a national championship caliber team. And I haven't gone into a season saying that, I don't think, ever during
even
the
last
era.
Year. Yeah, even last year, we weren't saying this.
Even 2016 when, you know, they were solid. I mean, still a lot of question marks on that team. They were really good, but this feels like the best.
Yeah. I mean, even like Feinbaum was saying Harbaugh will win a title at Michigan when he was hired. Like, everybody was saying that.
Right.
It was a given.
Remember I think it was Lee Corso said something to the effect that Harbaugh was going to haunt the dreams of Urban Meyer, which turned out not to be true. Mm. You know, everybody just assumed that it was going to happen. And now we're going into year 9, and now it feels like this is the year where not only should it happen, but it seems like there's a high probability that it will.
Real quick for Justin's question, I think it's 2. I think Michigan will be ranked number 2.
Nope.
Maybe 3.
It'll be 3, and it'll be bullshit, but it'll be number 3. It will be Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan.
I just, dude, with the new quarterback at Ohio State and the way it went, I don't know how you can justify that. I really don't.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Well, you know, there's still some bias out there. There's still, you know, people view Ohio State a certain way. And I you know, I have a hard time believing Michigan's going to come into the season number 2. But think about that. Even if Michigan enters the season number 3,
people
we're talking
pissed.
About an entire year, right? The people are going to be unhappy. And we're talking about an entire season of Michigan basically being in the playoff conversation. I mean, this is going to be a team favored in every game, ranked within the top 5 all year. And we're going to see a repeat of what we saw last year.
Yeah. Nick, thank you for that super chat. We're not getting as many of those these days, Chris. Have you noticed that?
The hell? You think this is all free content?
I mean, it's everything we just talked about, Nick. The tight end room looks much deeper. I just didn't know what to expect from A.J. Barner. I mean, he did some things at Indiana, but he's not like a big, you know, NFL prospect type or a huge deep threat. So I didn't know, but I was very impressed with him. Matthew Hibner, again, has been around for a little bit and kind of played one of those little different roles. He's kind of a move guy. Same thing with Max Bredesen. He's not really a fullback, but that's kind of what they use him for. So I think they're good there. I really do. The D-line, I think, might be the deepest position on the team. Yeah, talent, depth, versatility across the board. Way, you know, star, it's a special roster. It's a special roster right now across the board. Chris, we're at an hour, so I don't know how much time we're going to spend on this, but let you take the reins a little bit on this on this coaching news on Michigan staff, which they have one of the best staffs to go along with one of the best rosters in the country. Their coaching staff stayed intact. It's as good as anybody in the Big Ten for sure and across the country. And was it three of them, right? Three of the biggest pieces got re-upped, and now they're ready to roll, man.
Yeah, and shout out to Aaron McMahon from NLive. I think he's the one that sent in the request for to get whatever information that they needed for the new contracts, because prior to his report, I didn't see it anywhere. But yeah, Michigan has extended the contracts of three coaches on the staff. It starts with Sherrone Moore. So Sherrone Moore, according to this report, signed a new 3-year deal, takes him through the 2025 season. He's going to be making $3.6 million over the next 3 years, split up $1.15 million this upcoming season, $1.2 million in 2024, and then $1.25 million in 2025. He's also eligible for bonuses totaling $100,000 for each season that the Michigan offense can complete the regular season within the top two in scoring in the Big Ten Conference and the top 10 in scoring across the country. So there's some incentives there for Sherrone Moore. One of the most important pieces to the coaching staff. I think that everybody believes he is destined to become a head coach, but as long as you can keep him in Ann Arbor, you want him in that spot. And so I'm really excited to see what he looks like as the sole lone offensive coordinator this upcoming year. Because there were questions about, when you had Jim Harbaugh as a part of it, Sherrone Moore, Matt Weiss, who's really calling what. To me, this is Sherrone Moore's opportunity to really show what he can do as an offensive coordinator. And then
Sherrone Moore is a guy that I've known for a while. I used to communicate with him when he was at Central. He's a phenomenal recruiter. He obviously has coached the best offensive line in the country the last – I mean, the dude is – he's a star. He is a star in the coaching world. And like Chris just said, it's paramount for Michigan to hang on to him as long as they can, because they're not going to be able to. I mean, that's just
he should be and probably will be a head coach somewhere else, but keep him at Michigan for as long as you can. And this goes for the next guy I'm talking about as well. Jesse Minner signed also a 3-year extension with Michigan, similar pay structure to Sherrone Moore, base salary of $1.15 million during the first year, goes to $1.2 million in 2024 and $1.25 million in 2025. He also has bonus incentives of $100,000 if the Michigan defense finishes in the top two in points allowed in the Big Ten Conference and in the top 10 in all of college football. So he's got the opportunity to earn some bonuses.
Their contracts for me, are virtually identical.
Virtually identical. Awesome. For me, this was the one that I was the most excited about. Ben Herbert, Coach Herb, as Mozzie Smith told me, only call him Coach Herb. That I don't know if they call him Ben Herbert around the facilities, and you don't want to piss a guy off like that. So Coach Herb,
a fellow bald. I mean, how big is that for you?
Listen, I'm going to tell you, I don't know if this is well known just in the community in general, like the general public, but bald people are kindred spirits. When we see one another, it's almost like magnets. Like, we kind of understand the struggle that we've all had to go through. We share, shared suffering is something that I think brings people together. So anytime
misery loves company, bro.
Anytime one baldy sees another baldy, especially when, you're doing it well, you're a good looking guy out there, you're representing the balds well, there's a sense of camaraderie there. So Ben Herbert, for that reason and for many more, one of my favorites on staff, but Michigan's going to retain him. He's going to receive $1 million annually. And to put that in perspective, there was only one strength and conditioning coach that made that amount in 2022, and that was Oklahoma State's Rob Glass. But Herbert's going to receive $400,000 signing bonus and then $600,000 base salary in 2023. His base salary increases to $900,000 in year two, and then an annual contract retention bonus of $100,000 that will get him to that $1 million guaranteed for every year that he's in Ann Arbor. And so talk about, you listen to the way Jim Harbaugh talks about Ben Herbert, the impact he has on this team. When the news came out that Ben Herbert was signed to an extension, you could see the players were sharing it on social media and just how much it means to have a guy like that around the program. I don't think you can overstate just how much he's had an impact on the mental and physical toughness of this roster. And I said it way back in December that Michigan needs to do whatever they can do to keep Ben Herbert as part of this program for as long as they can. And this went a long way in doing that.
Jim Harbaugh nominated Ben Herbert for the Broyles Award.
Nominating him. I don't care. I'm doing it.
Not even eligible. He's like, I'm putting him on there anyway. And
I would too.
I would not be surprised if Jim Harbaugh is the pioneer who eventually gets that position put on the ballot, because there have been a handful of strength and conditioning coaches throughout the years who have been like on this level. Like Alabama's from a few years ago was like a star in college football. I know Clemson had a really good one at one point. I know Oregon's is kind of like a persona within the program out there. And Ben Herbert
is this the dude with the curly mustache mediums? Okay.
Yes. See? And he does Flex Friday and he goes apeshit. And like all these dudes are certifiably insane. All of strength and conditioning coaches are like bananas. They're like, dude, I don't know what the salary would take. There's no way you or I could do that job. Physique and strength alone obviously would keep us out of it. But like the mentality those dudes have is on another level. And Ben Herbert's as good as they come, and that's huge. I mean, those three guys all across the board are as big of a part as what Michigan football's been about the last 2 years. And dude, I know contracts don't mean that much, because if a big school comes along and wants to hire Sharon Moore or wants to hire Jesse Minner, they will. But this is, you know, this speaks to the trust that they have in those guys, how valuable they are, and how bad they want them to stay. And I mean, dude, Michigan's not a stepping stone job. I mean, these guys want to be a head coach. That's a different thing, but nobody's taking them away for other than a head coaching position. Like they're not going to go. Sharon Moore's not going to go be an OC somewhere else. Jesse Minner's not going to go be a DC somewhere else. And I think that's important too. When you look,
unless he goes back to the NFL.
That's probably fair. The NFL could come calling and you'll be hard to keep a guy away from there. But
Brandon, speaking of contracts, I think I asked you this when we were talking on the phone maybe a couple days ago. There was a lot of talk when Jim Harbaugh was shopping around and, you know, interviewing with NFL teams, and the fan base was saying, damn it, pay him, give him the new contract. We're both in agreement that he should be probably the highest paid coach in the Big Ten conference. He's not currently, you know, the talk about his contract has really cooled down. And I'm curious, do you think he coaches the 2023 season under his current contract, or does he get a new contract prior to the start of the year?
It feels like it's possible, but aren't we still also waiting on the NCAA stuff?
I don't know. Are we? Because that feels like that's really just fallen away.
I know. It all kind of feels like a little unknown right now, and like you're kind of in this gray area. I mean, I know when the violations first became known, it was like, oh, well, there's one of the reasons for the holdup with the contract thing, and maybe that's why he's looking around at the NFL. And obviously now the NFL is not a factor. And we've talked about it, like, Ward Manuel doesn't have to give him a new contract. He's under it. He's got one. He just got one.
But agree that he should.
He should. Yeah. No, I mean, like, after you have those two seasons in a row and you're re-upping multiple pieces of your staff and you've got it, you were able to keep everybody from your staff. Like, those are rewardable things for a head coach. And he certainly is deserving of that. But like, the fact remains is that he's fine. He's under a contract. And he's not on the last year of it. This isn't like a couple years ago where it's like, how do you sell to a recruit that you're going to be around when you're on the last year of your contract? It doesn't work. He's not there right now. So, like, I don't know. I don't know what Ward's thought process is. I don't know if Jim Harbaugh even cares. I really don't. I mean, he's wearing cleats in the bathtub probably. He doesn't give a shit, does he? He just wants, like, just give him a whistle and push him off towards the football field and he's fine. Like, I don't know if it matters to him. So it's kind of a strange thing to think about him, like, you know, worried about the paperwork side of being a football coach.
Yeah. Yeah. As soon as you said cleats in the bathtub, my mind immediately went to the interaction in the tunnel where we locked eyes briefly, and I got like the obligatory hey. You know, just it's a little side note thing, but
he stared at you like a deer on the side of the road as you drove by.
Jim Harbaugh and I locked eyes in the tunnel for, it was probably only 2 or 3 seconds, but it felt like it was a long time until he just uttered out, hey, and to break the ice there. I don't know. It was a weird little interaction, but I can't see a scenario where he coaches this upcoming season under his current contract. I just can't. He's had tremendous success. He's earned it. His assistants are getting paid as they should. And to me, Jim Harbaugh should be the highest paid coach in the Big Ten Conference. And I think that Michigan needs to take, you know, just like the assistants, you want to show that you want these guys to be there. You want to pay them what they're worth and pay them what their value is. And I think Jim Harbaugh's earned a new contract from the University of Michigan, given how the last two seasons have gone. So I would certainly expect him to get a new deal.
Yeah, you're not going to get anyone to argue that. I mean, it's just it just simply comes down to, feels like technicalities, but you're right. I mean, even the violation thing hasn't been talked about in like a month from anybody.
Yeah.
Just, it's like, what's happening there? Is anything happening there still? I don't know.
I don't think there's anything there. There's nothing. Yeah. There's nothing to happen.
Yeah. CJ Frazier, real quick. We're over an hour now, but there is finally a collective in place, and it feels like Michigan, it only took them 2 years, but it feels like Michigan has finally at least stepped into the correct realm when it comes to being a real player in the world of NIL. And that, you know, we've talked about it before. Like, some guys have done fine. They've done pretty well, but it wasn't in the same way as some of the other schools. There were no big bags being thrown at guys for recruiting purposes, for instance. But this is kind of the same thing, but the more above board way to do it. Like, you if you know you're going to get that every year that you're at Michigan as a player, you don't need to worry about a big bag being thrown at you as a singular recruit. You're like, okay, I'm part of that team. I'm part of that roster. I'm getting $40K. And that's pretty big. I mean, that's certainly going to be big for some of the upper middle to middle level recruits, the guys who aren't getting $500,000 to come play somewhere. So I don't know enough of the details about it. I know I saw a blurb about it today, and it's, you know, so I think somebody might have put up $5 million or $1 million or something for the first one to kind of get going or whatever it is. But a collective is something that Chris and I have talked about for a long time. Wasn't Juwan Howard even throwing that word around aggressively a while back?
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe, I might be mistaken here, but I believe that this one was started by somebody who was actually on staff last year as part of the Michigan football program. And I believe now he's gone out and he started this collective. It's been endorsed by Jim Harbaugh. He's thrown his full weight and support. He put out a statement about it. And so, yeah, I think this is a great thing. This is, you know, this is one of those things where the one-off NIL deals for the premier players, like that's all fine and good. But when you have a collective like this in place and every single person on that roster is getting paid $40,000 a year, I think that's how, we talked about this and you had just mentioned it, that's how you really sell your NIL program to some of those, you know, those four-star guys who aren't elite enough to land a big-time NIL deal, but they know if they spend 4 years at the University of Michigan, they're going to get $160,000 because of it. And so that's the world that we play in today. That's the market that you have to operate in with NIL being the way it is. And I think having a collective in place, a legitimate collective that can pay every single player the same exact amount, I think is huge. And so I'm fully supportive of it.
Yeah, the big fish are still going to be the big fish, and they'll be able to do their own thing. But you start to have a place like Michigan that's all of a sudden, all right, now it's 40 grand, and then it's 60, and then it's 80, and they'll be cooking with gas. And that's what I've been talking about since day one. I'm like, oh, just one of the best business schools on the planet. Oh, just the largest donor base around, the biggest network in the world. Like, it just seemed to be like so weird that this wasn't there from the very, very beginning. And I kept saying also, I'm like, they're sucking right now. They're falling behind. They're not doing this. They're not doing that. But the second they flip the switch, they're going to be as good as anybody at it. And I, you know, hopefully they can get to that point in a hurry. And this is certainly a step in the right direction. So yeah, that's big. I mean, it's the collective idea again is something that Chris and I have mentioned a lot. Even Juwan, like I said, Juwan Howard has talked about it. Maybe Hunter Dickinson did too, but you know, he's off to do whatever he's off to do now. Apparently talking to Calipari.
Maryland, Kentucky, hilarious. Georgetown.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see what happens with that. That's still just weird. It's just weird.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a couple things left on the list, dude, but good Lord, we're coming up on an hour, 20 minutes.
Yeah. Well, we did spend a good amount of time on our anatomy during the first part of the show, about 20, 30 minutes on that.
It wasn't that long, was it? We'll go back and look. We'll clean it up. We'll clean it up for next time. But for now, I feel pretty good.
No, Brad. I think we should talk about our bodies more. I think that's what people really want. That's the content people want.
Do you think they want as much of that as possible? I promise I'm not going to spend a lot of time on my torso here. You can hear that, right?
Yeah, I can hear that.
Okay.
Clear as day.
Clear as day. All right. So that's a pretty good show on a Wednesday night. A lot of good talk about the spring game, this roster, Michigan's upcoming season. Chris is just officially inducted into the TFG Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
If anybody would like that clip for their own consumption, reach out. I'm kidding. I don't know. People might do it anyway, but
listen, bottom line, lots and lots to be excited about with this football program. Again, going to enjoy summer. I don't want it to go by too fast, but really excited to see what this program turns into in 2023.
Just one more
Natty time. Or bust.
One more time on the way out. We'll see you on Wednesday.
Was it a museum, library? I'm not sure what the hell that was. Their annual trip. So every year they take a team trip. Again, getting reps in a couple of weeks. Excuse me. Moving the ball, playing defense, like all of the other. Moving the ball, playing defense. Motherfucker. And, we'll chop it up as. At the same time, fuck my ass. A four-star kid out of four-star running back out of Ohio State, or I'm sorry, Jesus fucking Christ. Games that need fucking God. Starts with Isaiah. But outside of that, that's all I got for you. So, thanks for tuning in. If you watch this shit show, if you made your way all the way through it. Kudos to you.